Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters. My name is Veronica Entwistle, and as a lot of you know, I'm an intuitive and energy counselor, but I bring in some wonderful, wonderful people who teach me a lot and apparently a lot of education for you as well. And tonight, my paradigm shifter is a very exciting woman who was on a couple of years ago and who can help us guide ourselves through these crazy economic times and probably crazy astrological times, so she can clear that one up. Join me to welcome Madeline Gerwick from PolarisBusinessGuides.com, if you want to look her up. Madeline, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
I'm really excited to talk to you about like what's going on with global economy and what does astrology have to do with it and what is this thing about good timing? I hear you do.
Well, let's take those one at a time.
But they do go together, don't they?
They do indeed. Now, first of all, what's happening with the global economy and what does astrology have to do with that? Astrology gives us a good sense of what the cycles are, which we really cannot get any other way. I studied astrology, not just astrology, I studied economics in college, so I got my degree in economics. And they have access to certain cycles that they're watching. But the astrological cycles are much more repeatable and reliable. And so
but astrological cycles tell us what energies are kind of coming at us or coming at our
what the energies are, kind of what the universe's plan is. Yeah, that's how I like to look at it.
Secrets unfold.
Yeah, and so from an astrological point of view, we're in a 40-year cycle that started in 2000.
Okay.
And this is a cycle to change from our old kind of nuts and bolts type of what we astrologers would call an earth economy to one that is what we would call an air economy. So we're changing over from things like manufacturing and agriculture and services and financial products to one that's based on information, knowledge, data, transportation, relationships, alliances, partnerships, those kinds of things, technology and innovation. So that's a fairly major shift. These kinds of shifts only happen once every 160 years, roughly speaking. And so it'll take until 2040 for us to complete this transition.
Well, let me ask you this. If they only happen once every 140 years, or what did you say?
160 years, yeah, roughly.
Then we didn't really have an air one 160 years ago, did we?
No, we've been in Earth.
Okay.
Earth since about 1840.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah, so it's been a little bit longer that we've been transitioning out of it. So we had a little kind of a dip into the air one in 1980. And then we dip back out of it for 2000. So from 2000 to 2020, we're kind of finishing our last Earth cycle, and then we're beginning the first air cycle from 2020 to 2040. But there's still a lot of transformation occurring, a lot of changes occurring in that first 20 years. So it's still, you know, it's like a 40-year period of economic revolution. That'd be the easiest way I could describe it.
Well, part of that is pretty scary, isn't it?
It's scary if you're opposed to change. Let me put it that way. I actually think there's a lot of opportunities and a lot of things need to change, and so I don't see it as negative. I just see it as a different way of doing business, and I used to work in the corporate world, and my take on the corporate world was that a lot of things needed to shift.
Right on.
This will be some of the things that shift will be part of this. And then the second piece to what we're going through at the moment is a 16-year period of economic transformation. And the purpose of this economic transformation is to create a sustainable economy that can nurture not only ourselves, but the entire Earth as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this started in 2008, pretty hard to miss, and it'll end in 2024.
Okay.
And so we're still, you know, relatively speaking, in the early stages of this. And whenever you go through transformation, you're going through a major permanent change.
Mm-hmm.
And so a permanent change for your listeners would be defined as the difference between if you take a bunch of clay and you form it into a bowl, the shape of a bowl, that change is not permanent, you see, because you could, just mess it up and make something else out of that same clay. But if you take that clay bowl and you put it in a kiln and fire it, that is a permanent change.
Mm-hmm.
It will never be clay ever again. And so that's what we're looking at with the economy, because the economy has gotten to a point where it's basically unsustainable. It's based on, you know, the banks basically have to put out more and more debt every year. They have to put out more and more loans, I should say, which of course is creating more and more debt, in order to just have enough money in the system to pay back the loans that are out there plus the interest.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, basically they've reached the outer edges of that limit.
But do they know that?
Well, obviously, because they're obviously not putting out as much loans now as they used to.
But I heard they were printing money that is becoming more and more worthless.
Oh, that's true, and that is a different issue, but yes, that is part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but let me just back you into that one a little bit. Because we have so much debt, not just for the U.S. government, which is huge, but for businesses and consumers alike, and even your smaller governments, you know, your municipal and state governments also are loaded with debt. So it doesn't matter where you look, there's too much debt.
Well, and the individuals had too much credit card debt, so it's all part of the same picture.
It's all part of the same picture, yeah. Consumers had too much debt, businesses have too much debt, etc. So this is kind of like a lead weight. It'd be like if you were trying to swim with a lead weight on your legs.
Right.
It'd be like that, you know, and you're drowning.
You have to become a diver.
And then, you know, somebody else is going to loan you more money. They're going to pour more water on you.
Great.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I sure do.
You can't get to prosperity with more debt. It's not a possibility. Now, what happens with debt when it gets to be too high like that? There are only two ways to get out of it. One way is that you can forgive it. So just think to yourself about who wants to forgive the U.S. government their treasury bond debt. There's at least $14 trillion of it out there, right?
Yikes.
And, you know, I don't know the exact percentages anymore, but, you know, China and Japan and, you know, these other countries own a fairly significant percentage of our treasury bonds, you know, 30 or 40%.
Wow.
So, you know, you're not going to have a situation where people or countries are going to volunteer to make a donation to the U.S. government. So the only other way that you can literally get out of the debt is to inflate your way out of it. And that's what they're attempting to do.
Is that's reducing the value of the American dollar? And
yeah, so what you're doing is you're paying back dollars that you borrowed that were worth more, mm-hmm, with dollars that are worth less. Does it make sense?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay.
But it's just jimmied. It's not real. I mean, this has been the biggest problem, is most of it isn't really real, is it?
Well, it's still real to a certain percent. I mean, the U.S. dollar is declining in value, and you can see this pretty rapidly after we went off the gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was 71. Now, if you look back, the average house price in 1941, 30 years before we went off the gold standard, was around $7,500. And when we went off the gold standard in 1971, the average house price was about $22,000.
So when you say we went off the gold standard, does that mean that no longer did they actually equate a dollar bill to how much gold it was worth?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So there was no gold backing the dollar when we went off that. It was not a part of the equation anymore, and all the money from different countries was just traded based on, what was backing your U.S. dollar then and now, of course, is the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, which isn't too exciting these days because all in debt, right?
Right.
But in, 1971, the average house price was around $21,000, $22,000, so roughly times three of what it was in 1940. And 30 years later, in around 2000, the average house price, in our neck of the woods was around $350,000. So, more than times 10. And that inflation that you see there, the difference is the difference in not having a gold standard. It's easy to create inflation. It's easy to print money, you see. And literally that's what inflation is. It's when you devalue your dollar by printing more than it's appropriate to have.
More than is legitimate.
More than is legitimate in the sense of how much you're producing from your country.
Right.
So when you have that situation, you're just devaluing the dollar every time you print more money. So they're doing what they call quantitative easing. So the first time they printed a couple of trillion, and now they're going to print 600 billion. So they're doing less of it.
Oh, wow.
But nevertheless, they are devaluing the dollar. And as they do that, you see, they are still only legally required to pay back a dollar of this devalued dollar for whatever they borrowed previously. So this new dollar, let's suppose the new dollar really has a value of, let's say, 50 cents just for argument.
Mm-hmm.
You see. So they print more money so that they can pay back this debt with dollars that are worth less. In other words, they buy less than what they used to. And so instead of you being able to buy a $100,000 mansion as you could have when I was a kid, and it would have been quite a substantial mansion, now your mansion is going to cost you, $1 billion or
right.
something
right.
stupid like that, or, 50 million or something silly, you see. So that's their intention, is that they're going to get out of this debt by printing a lot of money and paying it back with a dollar that doesn't have the same value.
As Swami Beyondananda says, it's homeopathic money.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly right.
But so yeah. Who decided this? I mean, you're an economist. Who would decide that? It seems rather impractical, or it's like the
would imagine what's going on, although I'm not privy, obviously. I imagine that the Fed, perhaps gets together with the Treasury. And the Treasury says, hey, the U.S. needs to borrow more money because we don't have enough, so we're going to have to sell bonds again. And so rather than having a failed bond sale, the Fed says, okay, we'll buy your bonds, and they print money to buy the bonds, basically.
Oh, wow.
You see, and so it's a combination, you see, because basically the Treasury is trying to figure out how to prevent the U.S. from going bankrupt. And that is a very, very real probability. Not even a possibility. I'd say it's a very high probability.
What's the time frame?
Probably no later than 2015.
Wow.
But it could be any time between now and 2015.
Wow. And then what happens?
Well, then you would have discharge of debt, of course. That's what bankruptcy is. Your debt is forgiven.
But you know what's interesting is when...
But that would mean, of course, that all the investors would get, you know, pennies on the dollar.
Right.
You see, and you know, so you would... And of course, that's what China is terrified of. And they don't have an easy way out. They are terrified that the U.S. will go bankrupt. And they will not be able to sell their U.S. Treasury bonds. But if they sell their treasury bonds now, you see, that would be enough to cause the entire treasury bond market to fail.
Well, let me ask you a very innocent and naive question. Is America not capable of suddenly beginning to really up their production, the productions were sent to other countries and so on, and we don't have great production in this country at this time.
It depends on what you think of as production. See, I'm a knowledge worker, you see, and to some extent you are too, of course. And so, and there
we work in the air, you mean?
Well, I mean, we are selling information, ideas,
and support,
you know,
support for
relationships. Support services. I mean, you know, so we're selling things that we don't manufacture in the typical way. We're not sitting at home and putting widgets together.
Right.
You see, we're using knowledge to create a product or service. You see, and so that's what I was alluding to earlier. It's not that you aren't going to have manufacturing. You will have
right.
it.
Right.
In various places throughout the world, but just look, I mean, all our growing stuff has gone. You know, a lot of your vegetables and fruits come from Chile or Mexico. You're lucky if it comes from California.
or we heard also that Europe and Eastern Europe won't touch American meats because they're so full of stuff.
Oh, I'm sure of that.
There's
yeah.
a lot of poisoning we've done in our own
right.
country to create
exactly.
better markets and shot ourselves in the foot. So that's kind of what I'm thinking. Isn't there a way to turn some of this around that could come up from the earth? Or is it
well,
just
that is
too
kind
darn
of the,
big?
That's the intention behind creating a sustainable economy. So the sustainable economy cannot be based on creating more debt, because that's obviously not working. It
right.
cannot be based on creating profits at the expense of the health of people and the health of the earth and other animals. You see, that's not sustainable either. See, that's what I mean. You can't really continue on the same path anymore, because it's not one that is sustainable.
Right.
And that means, you know, basically, we're at the end of that road.
And that's a good thing.
Well, it is, in my opinion.
Yeah. It's just
the transition
time that's really awkward for people.
Transition time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you can kind of think about your transition time as being similar to if you're remodeling your house and you're taking it back to the studs and you're putting in all new wiring and all new plumbing, and maybe you're putting in all new floorboards. You see, so it's not very sightly. It looks pretty messy, you see.
Right.
And you know, our typical instinct is to go through the sky is falling routine.
Right.
But actually, it's not. It's not that. It's that we are transforming the foundation of what our whole economic system is based on. And so, you know, it's not going to be okay to make profits by putting neurotoxins on pillows as flame retardants.
Oh, really?
See, that's not going to be something that will be considered acceptable. So
how can Joe Average get into this? I mean, these are people you work with who are on the cutting edge of changing this consciousness in their finances, isn't it?
Well, one of the things that I see happening to Joe Average is that he doesn't have his job anymore. A lot of them don't. And maybe, you know, the corporation used to supply him or her with all the benefits and income that they, you know, were accustomed to having. So one of the things that's happening as part of this transition is that people who are without work are frequently starting their own company.
Good, yeah, I like that.
Or they band together with others who are out of work and they start a company together. And they do things in a different way because, you know, they just escaped the corporate world and they really don't want to go back.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, if you really were to look at it, the reason a lot of people are not able to get a job after they've been let go of one is because they don't want to go back to that environment.
Mm-hmm.
You see, they don't want to go back to, you know, the horrific politics or the backstabbing or whatever was going on at their past job, you see.
Right, a lot of corruption and deception. Well,
yeah, right, and things that are unethical and so forth. So they don't want to go back to that, you see. So energetically what they're putting out is don't hire me.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hire me. I don't want to be hired by your company. You're another whatever, you know. So these people will band together, and typically what you really want to see them do is to follow their passion. In other words, there's some issue, some challenge, some topic that is particularly of interest to them, and they want to do something about it, you see. And whether it's a bunch of engineers coming up with a new engine, let's say, or, you know, some new technology to solve some major energy problem, for example, it doesn't really matter what the passion is so much as that they get out there and do it,
mm-hmm.
you see. And so your other question was about good timing, and that's how I help people a lot is with good timing. So I'm not only just giving them, you know, my newsletters and email updates to talk about business and economic trends and how to work with the energies, but my one of the tools that I created for people is the Good Timing Guide, so they can know good days and good times to do important activities for their businesses. And one of my specialties is to find a date and time for a new company to start, so that they are starting on a date and a time with good finances, high growth, assuming they want high growth. Most people do.
But when you're saying good timing, it does coincide with the universal energy flows as described by astrology, doesn't it?
Yes, that's what I mean. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm looking for a day that looks like their company, mm-hmm. has the energies that their company would have, the products and services that their company would have.
So does that mean you do a chart for their company?
Yes, I do a chart for their company.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay.
And typically they may have 6 to 10 minutes to get it. It's not a very long window usually. It depends on where it is. If you're further south, you might get a 15 or 20 minute window.
What do you mean by that? The 15 minute window to actually begin the company?
Yep.
To write the contract or sign the contract?
No, to start it with the state.
Oh.
So usually, you know, that paperwork is already prepared in advance, and you're going to either submit it online, which is, if your state allows you to do it like Washington does, Washington State will accept the date and time that you submitted online as the date and time your company started, assuming your paperwork is correct. Other states, you have to stand in line and get that window, you know, at the Secretary of State's office, usually at the state capitol.
Well, that could be a bit of a challenge.
It can be, and so I have specific instructions for people for how to do that. And so there are ways to work it out. There are ways to work it out. But
can you give us some examples of people that started their businesses that way?
Oh, well, aside from myself, you mean?
Yeah, tell us about yourself. I'm fascinated.
Yeah, I mean, I have a business chart that has actually a lot of day-to-day business, and that is typically what my schedule is like. I'm usually full, you know, with work. But that's in the company chart, you see. It's kind of set up that way in the company chart. So high growth of day-to-day business and high growth of company reputation and so forth. And via books, publishing, radio, that kind of thing. Which all of it has transpired. So kind of interesting.
So you're telling me that when you look at the chart, you can see the propensities for your particular business to have high daily activity.
Yes.
But it's not because of that window. It's that you then take it to the window to start it off?
No, actually it is because of the window, the 10-minute window. I actually had a 6-minute window because I started in December. My company is a Sagittarian company.
Oh, my.
And it's going to have its birthday pretty soon on December 12th. So it's very interesting that the company is well described. And actually, the owner or CEO of a company is well described by the sun in the chart as well. So you can see both the company and the owner. You can see employees. You can see vendors. You can see customers. You can see marketing, you can see finances, income and profitability. You can see credit, you can see facilities, you can see trademarks, research and development.
Ability to cope with the rapid changes in astrological presentation.
Well, actually, I would say the rapid changes that you're talking about are primarily due to the Mayan calendar.
Okay.
Astrology has some rather unusual cycles that we are going through at this time. But nothing compares to what's happening with the Mayan calendar. The Mayan calendar will complete in roughly a year from now. I think it's supposed to complete October 28th, 2011, according to Carl Kalman.
Right.
Carl Kalman. And
he's been a guest several times.
Oh, yeah. So that is the major acceleration that is occurring is through that calendar. And so we'll get another major acceleration beginning March 9th when we begin the final underworld for the Mayan calendar.
March 9th, eh?
Yeah, that's not too far away.
No, not the way time's moving so fast. So what are we going to expect during that last phase?
Well, in the phase that we're in now, this phase lasted about 12.8 years. And the amount of transformation that we did during this particular 12.8 years is equivalent to the amount of transformation we did in the previous 254 years.
That's pretty fast.
And so the amount of transformation that we're going to do next year in 260 days is supposed to be equivalent to the amount of transformation we've just done in the 12.8 years.
Wonderful. Well, now tell me this, Madeline, can you see that astrologically? Do you see that in a chart as well?
Well, we have cycles that are coming up that are what I would call revolutionary cycles. That's a Uranus square Pluto cycle. Back during the mid-60s, we had Uranus conjunct Pluto, so they were together in the sign of Virgo, and they were just getting started. And that's a revolutionary energy, and there are major changes. And if you think about the mid-60s, we had several revolutions at once. So, you know, it's very common to remember that, you know, we had the race riots. We had the Vietnam War protests. We had women's liberation. We had the sexual revolution with the pill. We had the environmental revolution. Forget who it was, Rachel Carson?
Oh, right. Silent Spring, sure.
Yeah, so we had all these revolutions beginning at the same time. All social revolutions, very big. And we had Star Trek show up.
Right.
You know, which was very important because it gave us a model of where we were going.
Right.
And it wasn't legislated. So that was important. So those things that got started then are going to get a little bump now.
So, but it's not the same. It's not Uranus working with Pluto. It's in opposition?
It's square, so they're challenging each other.
Okay. So, that's going to look different then.
That's going to look different. And basically, Pluto in Capricorn is all about a lot of controls, you know. People call it New World Order, you know, big corporations being in control of the world.
Oh, Lordy.
That kind of thing. And here's Uranus coming along and saying, nope, 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 we're not going for it. We're not buying it. You know, you're not going to control us. And we're not going to fall in step with your plan.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So that's why I say it's revolutionary energies. And you've got a lot of things going on. You know, we just had the largest redistribution of wealth that I can recall in this country, with the mortgage crisis.
Oh my, that was awful. Well, and it still is.
Still is awful.
But let me just throw this at you: the Uranus in opposition to Pluto. I think of Pluto
square. It's not actually opposite. It's square, 90 degrees.
Oh, okay. I think of Pluto as transformative. So I'm saying, isn't there an opportunity for the energies to be pushing and transforming the structures or the institutions that run our countries?
Yes, absolutely. Hmm. Pluto will transform it has two ways that the energy can go.
Hmm.
It can go towards increasing power.
Mm-hmm.
Which Pluto represents power, so that's one way it can go. And it can go towards, which would be, from many people's point of view, a negative use of the energy.
Right.
And it can go towards transforming the entire existing structure into a more sustainable economy.
Hmm.
Now, an interesting comment I will make about Michael Moore's movie on capitalism, A Love Story.
Mm-hmm.
He had an actual letter in there. It was from a Goldman Sachs to an investor, and basically this was a letter that went out to one of their top investors. Now, I mean, these are people who have a great deal of money,
mm-hmm.
great deal of money. And so the letter was basically telling these investors that, you know, essentially you guys form a plutocracy. Interesting use of words. I never would have imagined Goldman Sachs using that word, plutocracy.
Hmm.
But essentially, you know, that this is, you know, as investors, they're a powerhouse, you see, and they have a lot of power to do what they want. And that's what the letter was talking about. But they were bringing up the fact that there existed real danger. And what was the real danger? It was the fact that people like you and me may revolt.
Aha.
So I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah.
That, you know, they've already figured out Uranus square Pluto. You know, the underlings are about to revolt. And so,
but actually, I have to tell you, I mean, I'm Canadian, right? And I also was a 60s wild one.
Yes.
I'm always saying to my American friends, like, I thought this was a revolutionary country. Where is the revolution? Why are we listening to the suppressions and seeing the revelations of those, but nobody's really revolting, you know?
I completely understand. I was quite amazed at the time when Bush was given the presidency by the Supreme Court, and I turned on BBC radio, and they had all these comments from people in Europe, right? And they were calling it a coup, and they were, you know, I mean, they were up in arms about it, you see?
Right.
And in our country, no one was doing anything.
one of my girlfriends packed up her family and moved to Costa Rica.
Mm,
that was pretty powerful.
Mm-hmm, yes. Well, so what you have had happen here is that the media has been taken over by those major corporations.
Right, I know that. It's
so
crazy.
So everything that is getting out there, except perhaps via the internet,
mm-hmm.
Is primarily based on what they want you to know.
Mm-hmm.
you see.
But that started a long time ago, because we were really aware of that from Canada, that Americans didn't know what went beyond their borders. We knew it as kids, you know?
Yes. Oh, yeah, that started a long time ago. But you know, when you were a kid and I was a kid, a lot of that was just omission.
Right,
and
probably.
Now it's not so much omission as you have planted stories that aren't stories at all. They're that are just there to fill your mind with a certain set of ideas, so that you will basically kowtow to their agenda.
So if I were to jump from that right back into business, and you're helping people with business, the first thing is don't buy into the really horrendous predictions and projections that are coming at you through the media.
Exactly. You definitely want to stay out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's one of the ways that they control people, of course, is through creating fear.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, essentially what they've done with the whole war on terrorism.
Yeah.
You see. So, you know.
And now with these full body scan things, people
are terrified
to fly.
Yeah, now that's an interesting situation. I was just sent out in my email update last night about that. You know, we're having an interesting cycle now. This is Mars and Sagittarius. Sagittarius is related to travel.
Okay.
And so Mars and Sagittarius squared up Jupiter and Uranus. Now, Jupiter is in Pisces. And usually when you have Mars square Jupiter, you're trying to do too much with too little time, money, and energy. That's number one.
That sounds like us.
And it's a holiday, so it's no big surprise, right?
Right.
But, you know, the Mars square Uranus part of that is very volatile. It's very explosive. So along comes, you know, Mars square Uranus with this, and people are pissed off about the full body scan.
Oh, yeah.
And you see, that's the Mars square Uranus part of it. And if you really look
at the presentation of the scanning is Mars square Uranus, or just...
Well, it's partly Mars square Uranus is the technology. And unfortunately, that technology has health consequences, and it does not actually make us safer in the sense that it can detect the things that they can't detect now. So we're actually not any safer with those full body scans.
Well, so what is their motivation? Is it to scare us? Is it to keep that fear percolating?
I think it's more the fear thing. You see, they keep people sort of...
on edge.
Well, it's not even just that. They train them to be submissive, more and more submissive by doing these things. So the key here is the Jupiter. Jupiter represents the courts and or Congress. And Jupiter is in Pisces, which is a sign that it co-rules, so it's competent, it's very skilled and capable. And so in this particular case, Jupiter is going to win this deal. And that means that the courts or Congress are going to tell TSA, which is basically represented by Mars, shape up, you're not going to do this stuff.
Oh, good. So you think that won't keep going, eh?
I do not, no.
Someone was saying they think it's to stop us from traveling so that we're stuck where we are. But I don't believe that.
I think it's more, you know, along the lines of keeping people submissive.
Yeah.
It's easy to control people who are able, you know, to go for that, you see.
Right.
So I think that, you know, it doesn't have the, you know, of course the TSA doesn't have enough sense to use good timing, so they introduced it at a bad time. And fortunately for us.
You mean
us,
they didn't call you?
No, they didn't. Those guys just really screwed up. Fortunately for us.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, so I do expect to see that the courts will come back and say that it's illegal.
Good. Thank you. Let's hold the light on that. Because one of the things when you and I were talking yesterday was that with all of the cycles, whether it's Mayan or astrological, it depends on each of us to use the energies in a way that gives us power, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we want to not be in fear, because that just gives your power away. You see, you want to be focused in a positive way on what you want to create. And whatever that is, whether it's a business or a job or something.
Or the melting of the full body scans.
You know, whatever it is, you want to stay focused on a positive outcome. Because the universe does not hear no.
Right.
We might have talked about this yesterday. So all those people back during when Iraq, you know, we were going to go to war with Iraq, and there were millions of people out in the streets saying no war. But the universe doesn't hear the word no, so it hears war. So we had war. And we're still there. And so that's a mistake on our part to ever use the word no, not, you know, any kind of negative with whatever we're trying to create.
Mm-hmm. Adversarial consciousness doesn't work very well, does it?
Doesn't work at all.
Right.
So we need to frame what we want in a positive. You see, because that's what the universe hears.
Mm-hmm. Peace.
If we want peace, and that's what we really want to be focused on, is peace, creating peace.
All right, so let's go back. Let's see, where are we right now? And what do you recommend people do for financial, for business? How about that, for their own businesses? You talked about the entrepreneurial spirit a tiny bit.
Right. Well, for their own business, it's actually very useful to get a good timing guide, because there are so many business decisions we make every day. And every week, we have, three times a week, we have timeout periods. And during these timeout periods, just like it sounds, you can't score when the ball isn't in play.
Mm.
So you try and do some important activity during a timeout period, you're not going to get anything for it. Nothing is going to come of it.
Hmm.
So I try to get people to use a guide just so they can avoid periods when they shouldn't be doing something important, and also to choose a date that has a good final result. It's good for whatever, communications, relationships, negotiations, contracts, computers, whatever it is, you know, that they're doing, marketing, promotion, whatever it is. So you can get, and it'll show you if there's a green dollar, so you know if it's a good day with more money changing hands, that kind of thing. So if people could know when to do important activities in their business, they'll be more successful. The people that are not paying attention to stuff like that are kind of gradually going the other way.
Right.
You know, and so.
Well, let's do a specific thing. I know somebody who's an amazing inventor. He's created high-end speakers and amplifiers, and he's about to set out to install these in someone's very high-end home in California.
Mm. Oh, wow.
To give people the opportunity to experience them.
Cool.
So if we were to look at that. Now, first of all, do you require whoever the person's chart is, do you need that, or do you just go for the business chart?
No, actually, the chart for the business is more important. I mean, the chart for the moment that he actually introduces a product would be more important, you see.
The chart for the moment, okay.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of times what happens is people put something up on a website and then they send out an email blast that says, you know, hey, go check this out, blah, blah, blah. So that's its introduction moment.
So the time you put it up on the email is its introduction.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And then there was something about the prelude to your show, one of your radio shows, that said, and I missed the second name, but it was J.P. Morgan and someone else managed to create.
Walt Disney.
Oh, Walt Disney created strong markets in difficult astrological times, right?
They became very wealthy businessmen by using astrological timing.
Oh, they did. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, J.P. Morgan became a billionaire back when a millionaire was rare.
And they did it by actually consulting astrological information?
There were no good timing guides back then, so.
Well, so you weren't born yet, darling.
They had to go to an astrologer, and an astrologer had to figure out the time, which would have been very time-consuming back then.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, that would have been something that only the wealthy could have afforded, because it was to do a chart back then, just to calculate a chart would have taken an hour for a single chart.
Yeah, because they didn't whip it up from the computer, did they?
They didn't have any computers back then, no.
So let's go back to my friend who's the inventor.
So
he would come and he would speak to you about, well, tell me what the trend is anyway, taking these down to California over Christmas. And also he would come as soon as he was ready to do the announcement on the email, right, on the website.
Right. Well, there really are no good introduction dates between now and January 10th.
I mean,
January 10th is the first possible introduction date for anything. We just have Mercury retrograde. We have two eclipses coming up, and we're having a lot of endings as well.
Hmm.
So all of our full moons from October 22nd through February 24th, no, February 18th is all those full moons are at 29 degrees.
Okay.
Which is the last degree of a sign. And so full moons are times when something is coming to light. Everything comes to light at a full moon. A lot of decisions are made at full moons. So when it's at 29 degrees, what we're seeing are endings.
Oh, I see. And then there's five in a row.
Five in a row.
Hmm.
And the eclipse that we're having, the series of eclipses that we're having starting on the winter solstice, December 21st, is the first one, the lunar eclipse, and then January 4th for the solar eclipse. That series is about having a new group that comes together to do a very big and complex project.
Okay, so you can have that kind of starting amongst the endings of what was, is that right?
Well, exactly. So in order to have those new groups start, though, first there are separations.
Hmm.
So you have endings happening before the new start occurs. So there are a lot of endings occurring, you know, through the really until the full moon in March.
Hmm.
And so the full moon in March isn't until like March 19th.
Hmm.
You see. So a lot of endings that are occurring as these new groups are forming together.
And is that community consciousness, the new groups?
Well, they're based around what kind of project is being attempted. You see that they're coming together to accomplish some major challenge, some big project.
And do you see that as a trend in our society, which has been isolated by technology to a degree?
Well, yes, that is absolutely true. But, you know, in order to solve a lot of the problems that are occurring, people will have to come together to pool their knowledge because no one person will have the solution. The answers are too complex for that.
So my friend who's going to take his stuff to California anyway,
mm-hmm,
can be using the information about releasing ways of doing business, perhaps, and coming together, I mean, starting the eclipse or the solstice, coming together with new groups to rethink styles. Could it be like that? I'm making this up, you see.
It could be. I mean, he certainly wouldn't want to probably install it before the 10th of January.
Hmm.
Possibly the 13th, 12th or 13th might work too. 13th is a better day than the 12th. But you know, the situation in terms of he may find in December, you see, that, because, you know, we're going to go through Mercury retrograde, that there are certain tweaks he wants to do to the design.
Oh, I see.
Or there's something about it that needs to be reconsidered or rethought or redone, replanned, etc. Mercury retrograde, you know, happens three times a year. And during that time, you know, we're actually catching up and fixing our mistakes. And that's not a bad thing. That's how we learn,
mm-hmm,
you see. But we have this kind of crazy belief that we should never make a mistake, but we wouldn't learn anything if we did that. It's kind of it's a crazy idea.
Well, I was born in Mercury retrograde, and
So was I.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
And so what does that mean? Not that we make a lot of mistakes, but we review a lot of things?
We review a lot of things. We rethink things a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I've had to work hard on not editing what I'm saying on the radio. Yeah, because it's natural for me to rethink, and sometimes as I'm speaking, I'm actually rethinking what I'm saying as I'm speaking it.
Oh, that's good.
You know, so it's a very common piece, and it doesn't actually have anything to do with us making a lot of mistakes all the time. We frequently find other people's mistakes.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Or I go deep in and pick apart little details like nobody's business, you know, even though I'm Gemini all over the place and we're not supposed to be any good at details. I have a command of them that's
that's great.
Now, I'm worried that we're going to end the show without picking your entire brain. So I wondered if you could do a quick thing on what should people do for security? Should we buy bonds? Should we buy gold?
I recommend people to buy gold. I
isn't it expensive right now?
Well, it is, but it will probably go up to 2,300. It could go up as high as 3,000 or 5,000.
Oh, wow.
So it sounds high, but actually the actual high that we had when it was like 850, I think, back in 1980, if you were to look at that in inflationary terms, that would be the equivalent of $2,300 now.
Oh, I see. Well, what about silver?
Silver is also a good investment.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I usually don't recommend silver is it's heavy. You can hold $30,000 of gold coins in your hand. You probably could hold $40,000 now. But so it's very portable. It's very liquid. You can sell it 6 days a week and get your money out of it anytime you want. And the coin dealer will either write you a check or give you cash for it on the spot. So it's very, very liquid, and it's something that if they can't, you know, as the dollar decreases in value, the value of gold continues to go up.
Oh, that makes
sense.
So
it's a store of wealth, and that's what people need at this point in time.
But silver will still be effective, even though it's a bit bulky.
Yeah, it's heavy. I mean, you know, you if you're going to buy thousands of dollars worth of silver, you're going to need a room to store it in.
So, and what about bonds? You said treasury bonds are becoming devalued, so you don't think
treasury
bonds are...
Well, bonds at some point will fail.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're going to buy a bond, I actually don't recommend bonds because the interest rate is too low on them.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, gold went up 30%. I expect it to go up at least 30% in 2011, maybe higher.
So what do you think about the stock market? Do you know anything about that?
The stock market will continue to go up, but unfortunately, the stock market will not keep pace with the devaluation of the U.S. dollar.
Do you think the stock
it inflates? You see, it goes up, but it doesn't go up enough to cover the devaluation of the dollar. So,
does the stock market actually honestly reflect what's going on in the business world?
To some extent, you know, not completely everything. It's a snapshot of some portion of the economy, but not everything.
Well, that whole collision with the consciousness of derivatives, how there's so much investment in derivatives, none of which had any substance, really knocked us apart
in
2008.
Yeah. Right.
And I kind of think of the stock market as being kind of jimmied by other powers.
You can have things that you're not aware of going on in all cases, but yeah, that's one nice thing about gold. If you own gold, you have gold. It has a particular value. It's not going to decline.
You can trade it for a house eventually. We have to end this, Madeline, and I don't really like to because, as I told you, I wanted to learn more. But tell people how to get hold of you. I think that would help.
Okay. They can go to my website at askmadeline.com. That's askmadeline.com. Or they can call me toll-free at 877-524-8300. And that number again is 877-524-8300.
And I want to say for people who are listening, you can access Madeline's radio archives very easily on PolarisBusinessGuides.com, right?
Yes. Yeah, and AskMadeline.com takes people to PolarisBusinessGuides.com.
Oh, great. Well, it's
a little it's just a little easier to spell.
Oh, it's wonderful just to be able to click into your archives and pick up some of your wisdom too.
Yes, and that is very always available, and there's some great shows there for people who have time to listen.
Yeah, I really enjoyed zipping through. I didn't listen to all, but I got some.
Great.
So thank you very much, Madeline. I wish you the very best of the holiday season, and you've given us a lot to think about right now.
Okay. Yeah. You take care. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you. Many blessings.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. So thank you so much for tuning into Paradigm Shifters. And that was a wonderful paradigm shifter, hoping to lift your perception above what? Failures, the dropping of the economy, and into something positive. This is Veronica Antwistle saying thank you so much for listening. You can email me your feedback, or if you'd like a session or whatever, Veronica at VeronicaAntwistle.com. Good night, everyone.